Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back on FST. Mike Lute and Kevin Walsh. Here until 12. After that, it's going to be Fantasy Football Frenzy. It's 12 to 2. With Court Parson and George Kurtz. And then I'm going to bring in Rob Bowe. He's going to help me with this. Rob Bowe, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How was your graduation?
My graduation sucked.
Really? This is a perfect way to start hour number two. Why?
I mean, it didn't suck that much, but it was like...
You said it pretty strongly. You can't don't back away from it now.
It was pouring.
It came
pouring
hard.
Pouring rain. And that's at right. the theater at the garden. Actually, now the Hulu Theater at the garden.
Well, that's a cool place to have graduation.
It was cool, but it was long, and like usually, from what I've seen from like other years at the garden with graduations, is like people go out front and take pictures. But it was pouring rain, so like you couldn't do anything. And then my grandma fainted in Penn Station, which is pretty cool.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So okay. Just overcome. It's hot or whatever. It's humid and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, it was probably a big day for her. So she was ripping tons of cigs. She was a little drunk. And Penn Station's a little humid, so I think they kind of got to her.
Yeah, she's overcome with it. Well, big day for grandma. Is she okay?
Yeah, I reached out to her. Yeah. She said she's feeling good. She's good.
Shout out, grandma.
Okay. So I'm glad grandma's okay. So, well, that was way worse than I expected. I thought you were going to be like, I was kind of hungover. I didn't want to be there. But, yeah, that's a rough one. It was. I remember that day, actually. I ended up taking my son after the show over to Hofstra University where they were having the NCAA lacrosse championships, and it was a deluge. It was movie rain. It was raining that hard, so I do remember that day vividly a couple of weeks back. Well, I'm glad you're a college graduate, but I also brought you in to find out who else is on for the rest of the day. I know from 12 to 2 we have Fantasy Football Frenzy. That's Corey Parson and George Kurtz right after this. Who do we have after that?
And then after that we have Tout Wars, the Tout Wars Hour, which
That's
is two
right.
hours.
Woo!
With Lore Michaels and
Justin Mason.
Yes, Justin
Todd
Mason.
Zola.
Justin Mason. And Todd Zola comes in like in the last two segments.
So there you go. Yeah. So there we go. That's who we got for today. So good stuff. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. Awesome producing as always. And glad grandma's okay. And glad you're a college graduate. But yeah, college graduation. See?
Mike, who was your speaker?
Earlier.
Do you remember?
Me?
Rob, I hope.
Yeah, well,
remember.
Rob, who was yours? Let's do Rob first since he's.
I don't know. it was this woman that made some like phone line for like abused like children or something like that. It was pretty cool. And then Chuck Schumer came out. He got.
No, he was there again.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer got ripped apart. There were grown adults standing up and booing Chuck Schumer at their children's graduation.
That's
it was
tough.
Pretty
That's
he
tough.
He,
well,
he was the speaker.
Says a lot
at
more
mine.
About their character than his.
That's what I thought. But
well, is he on the board? Is he like a board of trustee or something like that? Anyway,
no, he's supposed to be. Maybe. He was like the special speaker. He came to mine and bragged about a bill he passed. It was.
Yeah, you're not that special.
I mean, that's a
It was one of the
that's a politician move.
Speeches. Oh my goodness.
I would say that Chuck Schumer actually shows up to. We have a parade in my town, and a St. Patrick's Day parade in the town.
He's there, too?
After the New York City parade, he goes every year. Because his niece is Amy Schumer, the comedian. And she's from this town where I live. So So he feels the need to go there every year, and he walks down and he shakes hands and he's smiling, and people are booing him and in some cases swearing at him because it's a St. Patrick's Day parade. So clearly people are drinking alcohol, and some people have a couple of beverages and they feel it's necessary to yell at the guy during parade, which is supposed to be fun for kids. But I digress.
Man, that's wild. I do remember that he got speaker.
Booed. Yeah. At my graduation was a guy named Tom Hume. He was Ooh. Integral in the peace talks for Northern Ireland, which then broke down after that. So
like it's just it was a temporary thing.
So, but here's the to put a bow on this conversation. The year after me at Boston College, 1996, the speaker, Bill Cosby.
Ooh.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Cosby. 96 graduate. I went to it because of friends of mine graduating, and he was there. So needless to say, he's going to have a tough time getting that type of gig in the future, getting like an honorary doctorate degree from a prestigious university, if I do say so myself. Anyway, moving on. You had one last football question, I believe.
Yeah.
Regarding the Lions, and then I want to talk about baseball because Jacob DeGrom can –
I can't wait to get DeGrom'd by
the Mets. It's not really unbelievable. So go ahead. Ask me the Lions question, then we're going to do baseball.
Yeah, I had written it down. Then I saw you were having a Twitter discussion about it, so I did feel like it was appropriate. Just talking about Kerryon Johnson, but I mean the backfield as a whole.
Yeah.
You have Kerryon Johnson, who the Lions seem set on making a three-down back, while they bring in LeGarrette Blount, who is, I would say a perfect goal line back. It can get you first down, second down. And then the complementary in Theo Riddick, it's almost to a point where the combination of having Theo plus Blount and just not even having a Kerryon Johnson there, who I believe they picked in the second round, maybe it was the third round when they selected him. Yeah, it was the second round, right? Like, so you probably could have added a more important piece there instead of Kerryon Johnson, but you spend that draft capital. They do seem set on making him a three-down back. This backfield feel, and Ameer Abdullah is still there, who's furious about the fact that he's clearly going to be moved out, I think, of this situation. It'd be almost strange to keep him on the roster at this point. The whole Lions backfield to me is a complete mess.
The oddity about this is that they have, in the last couple of seasons, addressed their offensive line woes, which were a big problem here. They have not had a 100-yard rusher in 68 games. Ameer Abdullah obviously hasn't done that in his entire career. This is 15, 16, 17. This will be his fourth season. And I don't think they move on from him. I just think this is a committee all day. If Kerryon Johnson comes in and pulls like what Kareem Hunt was able to do and really prove that he needs to be out there all the time, then so be it. But I'm not going to make that kind of prediction. I think it's a very jammed up backfield. I think Riddick is the guy you can count on for the catches. He's had over 80 catches in a season. I think they continue to use him in that role. And I think Johnson could be the starter week one. He certainly could be at some point during the year. But I think you're looking at a max of about 15 touches a game, which could be really good. But Ameer Abdullah is going to fight for those carries as well. And to your point, look, this will be his fourth year. He was a second-round pick, so this is probably his last year in Detroit. Could they move on from him to give Johnson some room? Yeah. And then at that point, his ADP would take a huge jump. But for people expecting him to be the workhorse back now, when they went out and they spent money for Blount, I don't see it. Because Blount is going to take some goal line carries and some additional touches, and Abdullah will just ride out this last year of his contract and probably getting some touches as well. So, yeah, Johnson could be of increasing value as the year goes on, but it's not going to be a workhorse situation. I just don't think they're built like that. They've been a committee for years, and I think they continue to do that. Will Patricia want to put a different look to it? It's possible, but it's a little bit too much guesswork. I think people that are sure of it are just, I think they're over predicting or overthinking it.
And I thought one of the things too, and it was mentioned in the conversation that you were having where Jake Seale is like, not only does it seem unnecessary to have him in that role, but it's not a good fit. And you were making an excellent point where teams try to over extend these players, and then they end up getting increasingly less value by trying to have them do more things. So I feel as if this whole line situation, like maybe I'd rather just sit tight, I'll add Theo Riddick, hope the PPR stuff comes through, and the rest of it fade the whole situation.
Yeah, because I think going with that logic, I think Kerryon Johnson and even players like McKinnon, I think people are just going to overpay for them a little bit. Now, at the end of the day, who cares if you overpay and he produces, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're drafting Kerryon Johnson higher than anybody else in your league and he produces, who cares if you took him in the second or third round and when you could have got him in the fourth? You know, you always want to try to extract value, positive value out of your picks. But, you know, at the end of the day, if the guy produces, the guy produces. People overpaid for Joe Mixon last year. They didn't overpay for Kareem Hunt, despite the fact that he's being drafted high, and on and on and on. So I just think it's committee. Johnson has a chance to take the job over at some point during the year, but Riddick is going to be the guy with the catches. So in a PPR situation, you have to consider that Kerryon Johnson won't be catching that many passes. They're going to have Riddick in there as often as possible on passing downs, a lot of two running back sets probably in many situations. I think the interesting player on that offense in total is Kenny Golladay, and see if he can make a leap. A lot of people loved him as a rookie last year. I think in general I would tell you to fade rookie wide receivers, but we're going to see what Kenny Galladay's got this year. Between Golden Tate and Marvin Jones, can he get in there? Can he take over the mantle from Marvin Jones and be the number two wide receiver opposite Golden Tate? So I think that's an interesting discussion for me. So baseball could start a million different ways, but since we talked about him yesterday, let's talk about Jacob DeGrom. Seven innings again, gives up one run, 13 strikeouts. No decision for Jacob DeGrom. They were tied at one when he left after the seventh. The Cubs ended up winning a marathon game. They scored six runs in the 14th to get the win. Ben Zobrist, 2-for-6, couple of RBIs. Jason Hayward, 4-for-5. Anthony Rizzo, 3-for-6. Chris Bryant went 1-for-8 yesterday. How's your batting average, buddy? That's a rough game. 2-for-6 for Kyle Schwarber. He gets a run scored. As far as the Mets are concerned, just anemic hitting. 14 innings, 7 hits total. How bad is that? Rosario went 2-for-6. Guillaume went 2-for-6. And Jacob DeGrom, again, an amazing no decision. On the year, Jacob DeGrom remains, I believe he's 4-0 on the year. Yeah, with a 1.49 ERA. His ERA dropped again yesterday. So there you go. Jacob DeGrom can't get a win. Doesn't matter. 7 innings, 13 strikeouts, can't get a win.
Jacob DeGrom is first in all of pitchers in baseball in WAR. He's actually has the highest WAR of any player in the entire National League. He has the second best ERA in all of baseball and the fourth best K per nine in all of baseball. He has had 12 starts. His record sits at 4-0. Jacob DeGrom right now is arguably the National League Cy Young. He's right up there with Max Scherzer. He is at the moment probably the hottest pitcher in all of baseball, and he cannot get a win. He went 7 strong with 13 Ks and gave up one run. I don't know really. I mean, there's going to come a breaking point here, right? I mean, how do you continue to go out there?
I think he's at it. I think he's got to be at it. I think he can't even, if you're him, you just can't even really think about it anymore. You're probably, like the team is so frustrating to him. He's just got to keep going out there and doing it. He's probably thinking about being on another team at some point, you know. But if he does that, he'll probably get distracted. He's a great pitcher. I think he's just got to keep going out there and doing it. From a fantasy standpoint, I think that's why a lot of people move away from wins leagues and goes to quality starts. George Kurtz, who did the show with you last weekend and I've done hundreds of shows with, he is a fan of the quality starts over wins just because there's so many situations like this that are frustrating throughout the year. DeGrom is a shining example of it, but there are so many situations throughout the year where you just struggle to get wins. I know I dealt with that in my league last year. I just couldn't get wins out of anybody. It didn't matter whether it was Chris Archer or Max Scherzer or whomever. I was getting a lot of quality starts, but no wins. Chris Archer had tons of leads blown on him, and he couldn't get wins last year, and DeGrom is the victim of that now. I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's June. He hasn't lost a game yet, right? It's amazing that he's had 12 starts and only four decisions total. it speaks to them blowing games on him.
I think
in general. Go ahead.
I think, though, this is this type of dominance with not reaping the benefits is, I think it's pushing the possibility of trade talks more than ever before, right? Like, I think a lot of times being within New York, we have heard the idea of the Mets selling off maybe when things aren't going right, moving on from some of these pitchers. And one of the things I talked with George about, actually, when we did the show last week, is we were talking about DeGrom. And I said, I feel like a lot of people don't realize how old he is. Not to say that he is an old man, but relative to his peers on that team, because a lot of them were so young. On the 19th of June, this month, he turns 30. So, the Mets are never going to give him that big contract when the time is coming. They're just not going to do
right.
it. So for them to be two games under, I mean, listen, it's June 2nd now, right? You don't have to trade him today. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know why you keep Jacob DeGrom on this team, assuming that they are not competitive. I mean, again, they're, I think it's 4.5 back for the wild card, maybe 5 now after last night, which is not some massive distance, and if they get hot and all of a sudden, you know, maybe they could do something. But I think that this is the year, considering some of the teams out there that are going to try to compete and how important starting pitching is, I think this might be the year that they do move on from Jacob DeGrom. And that's a really, really tough blow for Mets fans. But I just think that you have to commit one way or the other. They are constantly doing this dance in the middle where they pay for a guy like a Jay Bruce, and they've got a superstar like Jacob DeGrom, but none of these things seem to tie in together. And then they just kind of flat hit the middle ground, and it never just fully comes through. It feels like this might be the year that they move on from it, because I think that's the biggest point.
I know what you're saying. They'd have to be out of it like they were last year in order to do that, because Mets fans are not going to want to see this guy go. He's leaving at the end of the year anyway. He's a free agent.
Is he?
Actually, that's not. No. Oh. I'm sorry. He's arbitration eligible after this year. Mm-hmm. So he's not a free agent, but there's going to be people that are calling for him to help them win. Let's come back, talk a little bit more about this after the break.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST. And if you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. This contest is sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help and play in a free DFS contest with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. So talking a little bit more baseball, we're talking about DeGrom. He is under contract through 2020. He'll be a free agent in 2021. But I just don't see it. He's arbitration eligible after this year, so he'll get a pay bump. He's only getting paid $7.5 million a year, which I know is a lot of money, but relative to his performance and other players, obviously, Jacob DeGrom is worth more on the market. So I don't think they're going to move on from him. You're right. The Mets are always doing a dance. They sign players like Jay Bruce to make it look like they're making a splash in free agency. But in reality, they signed Jay Bruce because he was on the cheap. And they signed Adrian Gonzalez because he was on the cheap. The Mets' biggest problem right now is that the farm system is a mess. And they brought back Omar Minaya in order to help rectify that. But in general, they operate. The problem I've always had with them is, like, yes, they're not the Yankees, and they do suffer by the fact that from an image standpoint, by the Yankees being in their town, but they sometimes operate like a small market team, not a mid market team. There are situations where they just haven't paid guys or haven't gone after guys when they could sustain it. They could withstand signing some bigger free agents. But they just haven't. You know, they've gotten away with trying to do it on the cheap for a while and hoping that this pitching carries them again like it did in 2015. As you said, they're not out of it by any stretch. When you look at them, they're evaluating them, there doesn't appear to be a lot of hope. You know, they started off 11-1. From that time on, they've obviously been a pretty bad baseball team. And you look at them, and the offense continues to be anemic. 7 hits yesterday in 14 innings. So I see your point. But unless they are totally out of it and they can get a haul for DeGrom, then I don't think they make that move. I mean, this team's best chance is for DeGrom and Syndergaard to carry them. It would be, even if the rest of the team was good, that would be their best chance, to have those two absolute ace pitchers carry them through October. That just would always be their best chance.
The thing with this thing is, I pulled up some top 10 farm system rankings. There's a top 10 on MLB.com that was written beginning of March, and then Bleacher Report ranked all 30 farm systems back in January. And there were two things that stood out. First of all, in both of those rankings, the Braves and the Phillies had top 10 farm systems. Both the Braves and the Phillies right now have a better record than the Mets. So that is already concerning, because the Mets are supposed to be better than those teams. They're not. And they don't have currently a better future than those teams. There were three teams that jumped out through those rankings. Now, the Brewers were in the top 10, and the one that was in January, maybe it moved down because of the trade that they had made for Yelich. But we know that they have a pitching need. And then the other two that were in both of those top 10s are the Yankees and the Dodgers. Now, again, them moving with the Yankees is probably incredibly unlikely. And the Dodgers, we don't know where they're going to be come the deadline, and if they're going
where Kershaw is going to be.
Exactly. So we don't know if the Dodgers are going to be there. The other thing, though, that jumps out is from at least that Bleacher Report ranking, you mentioned it, and again, it's back in January, but it probably still holds true. There haven't been drastic moves. The Mets are the 29th of 30 ranked farm system in baseball. So it is really difficult, I think, to waste a Jacob DeGrom, know that you're not going to pay him. Because, I mean, Mike, if we're being honest, right, when he hits, so you said 2021, so he'd be what, 32 or 33? They're not going to give him that 7-year big deal. They're going to say they're waiting to give it to Syndergaard. His value is about to peak. We did the same dance with Matt Harvey, where they said, his value's at its lowest, you got to wait. Jacob DeGrom's value is probably going to be at the highest it will ever be come this trade deadline. There are going to be teams that want him. If they are not in the race, whether they will, it is difficult to say, right? Because that is projecting what their record looks like in late July, and that's also projecting the Mets maybe doing something logical, and that isn't always something we can do. But from your viewpoint, would this not be the time to move on from DeGrom? I understand there needs to be a certain level of a return, right? You're not going to trade him unless you are getting back a sizable haul. This is one of baseball's best pitchers, no doubt about it, who is under control with arbitration. But this team is currently under 500 with a horrible, horrible farm system and a top elite talent that they are wasting away in every sense of the word.
I think you bring up a compelling point as far as this being his peak value. I just don't get the sense that they are going to do this, Because
would you, though?
If you
would
trade
you?
DeGrom, if you're going to do it for one of them, I think you do it for both. Because what is the, are you really, if you keep DeGrom, if you get rid of DeGrom, where is the, what is this team's future? You're going to get a few players back. Say they get a kind of haul that the Yankees got for dealing Chapman or Miller, you know, one or the other. I mean, the Yankees were aces with those two trades. So what I think you need to do it for both, because you can conceivably get like eight players for those guys, which is transformative. My point in, if you only get rid of DeGrom, what are you doing with Syndergaard? He's then the face of the franchise on what is probably an even worse team for the next couple of years.
But at least he's 25.
Syndergaard even going to be here? Yes, but is he even going to be here for the turnaround? He's free agent around the same time, I think a year after DeGrom. So he'd be almost 30 as well. So that's my point. Like, I just don't know. I think you blow it all up and just start over again. Obviously, you can have Nimmo here and Conforto and those types of guys, but yes, that's the thing. I would be hesitant to give up either. Look, if they're two games below 500, say they play 500 ball for the next 6 weeks, 7 weeks, I think you have to think about it, but I just don't know. I think they won't be willing to do it because people show up because of those two guys. You know, the people, Mets fans love DeGrom and Syndergaard and Conforto, and they're going to become fans of Nimmo. We'll see how Rosario ends up, but those are really the guys that they're rooting for. They don't care about Jay Bruce anymore. You know, like, they know Jay Bruce is at the end of his career. They hope he plays better and hits more than three homers for the rest of the way, but it's a good discussion. I think he raised a compelling point, but I just don't think they're going to do it, knowing how the Mets are. So let me – go ahead.
No, just on the Syndergaard point, the reason why I disagree with saying that you would have to move both is because he's 25, and you would be giving up a guy who, at the time of doing that, would have 3.5 years of control left, where you have enough time to figure out if – as you were getting closer and closer to when he would be able to become an unrestricted free agent, to know how quickly the turnaround is.
That's a good point. I think you're probably right. You probably have some time to figure it out with Syndergaard. Mm-hmm. I guess my alternate point really was that, what kind of team is this going to be with DeGrom out? Like, what, are there any expectations at all for the team if you just trade one of the aces? What are they even going to do? So, so they have time to figure it out. So it's a good point. So you mentioned Max Scherzer earlier. Forget Cy Young. How about MVP? In that 14th inning yesterday, Max Scherzer comes in to pinch hit, gets a base hit, and ignites a rally that leads Washington to a 5-3 victory. So he comes in, gets the pinch hit, according to Jamal Collier from MLB.com. One Saturday's game at SunTrust Park went into extra innings. Nationals manager Dave Martinez turned to his ace, Max Scherzer, and told him to make sure he's wearing his cleats. He knew that he was managing a short bench, and if the game extended deep into extras, he would turn to Scherzer. So he collects a pinch hit single, a nice, the improbable rally of Washington with the Nationals scuffling for offense all afternoon. He drove a one-out single into center field for the first pinch hit of his career. Two batters later, he raced around the bases from first to score the winning run on Wilmer Defoe's triple into the right field center gap. So, good stuff. Funny moment, and funny in that it's just curious. But Scherzer, as we know, can hit, and despite the fact he's won the Cy Young in each of the last two seasons, he is a legit and he's pitcher of the month for the first 2 months of 2018. He stole his first career base earlier this season, and his slash line on the year is 310, 333, 345. So clearly, he doesn't get a ton of at bats, but he's hitting 310.
In all seriousness, can you give someone an MVP but not Cy Young? Because I'd like to give DeGrom the Cy. Like, Max Scherzer right now, though, is hitting 310. He has four RBIs on the year. Like, it's not just that he is, like, he's making the absolute most of this. He is leading all of baseball in strikeouts, and I think in wins as well, which, I mean, we did obviously just go over how arbitrary wins can be for starting pitchers, but he still has 9 on the year, which is top. So, and he's second in ERA. So maybe can the, I think DeGrom right now is pitching a little bit better on the year. Maybe Scherzer, but DeGrom leads all of pitchers in WAR. Like, is that it? Is that it? Is that a nonsense thing? If I gave if I said right now Scherzer is MVP but not Cy Young.
Yes.
Why?
Because it just wouldn't ever happen. You would have to be a starting pitcher that's only playing every 5 days. Mm-hmm. You would have to be completely dominant on the mound. And I am usually not a fan of voting pitchers for MVP. As important as they can be to a team, they aren't playing every day. They're only playing a small percentage of the team's games. You know, a healthy, fully healthy starting pitcher is going to pick up 34 starts on the year of 162 games. He's not playing in 130 of their games. I just don't see how you can be the most valuable player. There have been exceptions, obviously, throughout history where we've seen Dennis Eckersley and Justin Verlander and Willie Hernandez and other guys, but I just don't see it that way. The one time in history that I thought it was warranted was 1999 with Pedro Martinez. He was so good. I just thought that he really willed the team to the playoffs. Team leader, he was dominant every time out there. In a single season, it's probably the best I ever remember a pitcher being. People will probably bring up other seasons, but Pedro in 99 was the one time I remember thinking, you know what? And I was living in Boston at the time. It was really transformative the way he willed that team. They ended up losing the playoffs to the Yankees, but nonetheless, I thought he was the major reason for the Sox success. But so I'm not being hypocritical. I say I usually go against it. That's the only time I can ever remember thinking, you know what, I'd be okay with it.
I think, though, if Max Scherzer is going to be having this type of performance at the plate, we have to consider it. The thing that is facetious. I will say this, though, and I don't know where you fall in line with WAR. I can't remember if last week I was talking about it with George or on this program. I feel like I trust WAR because Mike Trout every year leads WAR, and I know that Mike Trout is the best player. So that has led me to believe that WAR is, at least to some degree, useful. So if right now in the National League, again, Jacob DeGrom is almost a full point higher than the leading hitter in WAR, which is Lorenzo Cain, who's at 2.9. DeGrom's at 3.7. So I actually agree with you.
I love Lorenzo Cain as a player, by the way. Side discussion. I love Lorenzo Cain as a player.
I really like what they're doing in Milwaukee, and I hope that they are aggressive in grabbing a pitcher and making a real push at the Central. I will say, though, I actually tend to agree with your point that I think it's really, really difficult to make an argument that a guy who doesn't even play in near 50% of the games, I mean, what is that percentage? Like 20% of the games a starting pitcher would play in, like the highest level of a pitcher would play in. I think it's an absolute 20%. Spot on point. And I typically agree with the logic. I think today, though, in all seriousness, I do think today, if you had to give out an MVP in the National League, I do think it would probably be Max Scherzer. Again, I know that you've kind of moved off the importance of these awards anyway, and sometimes they can just be so narrative-driven, and it's not, you don't get too worked up over it, and I think that is something that I hope to become in lockstep with as I...
You'll get there.
Yeah, I look forward to it. But I do think, as of today, I feel like Scherzer's got to be having the best year of any National League player. I could be wrong. Maybe you would disagree, and again, I think the fact that he's probably played, 13 games on the year? That stuff matters. I agree with that. But I would say right now he's probably been the best player in the National League to this point.
I think all fair points. You mentioned earlier Ward in the National League, top 10, the players in the top 10 in WAR. Well, the leaders in WAR in the National League are DeGrom, Aaron Nola, Max Scherzer. That's your three right there. So... Mm-hmm. Three pitchers obviously having dominant seasons. It's a good point. I mean, it's a fair point. It's just not something that, you know, I think would happen. But we'll see if the Nationals go on a tear in the second half of the year and Scherzer continues to be a big part of that, it's something to think about. I think you could absolutely see some Max Scherzer for MVP votes. I'll take a look at the last 2 years, see where he finished in the MVP. We'll do that when we come. I'll do that during the break, and we'll come back and talk about it to see like how he placed
the
top 10 voting of MVP in the last couple of years. So let me just hit up one more game. before break. I like to bounce around because you
Mike
know,
Trout's
during
war
the course
is so
of
ridiculous.
One given show. Say that again.
His war is so it's staring right in front of me. I mean, he is 1.2 better than the next closest person. And Mookie Betts is having a phenomenal season. And Trout, he every year he just laps the field. It is unreal. It is so unreal how good this guy is.
And he's not normally the fastest starter. And this year he's had one of the best starts to his career. So if he goes on the trajectory that he normally does over the course of a year, he's gonna outdistance everybody by a lot by the end of the year. He's obviously, you know, competing for the AL lead in homers along with Machado and Betts and Ramirez. You know, we'll see.
He got it last night. He is tied right now.
What did I say, Ramirez? I meant Martinez. Not Ramirez. So, we'll see how he – we'll take a look at his game when we come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Scherzer thing. The only other game I was looking at right now, 2-0 win for the Giants over the Phillies. Get a good outing from Suarez, 7 shutout innings and 5 strikeouts. Velasquez takes the loss right there. Not a lot of hitting all the way around. Santana with a hit, Mikel Franco with a hit, Jorge Alfaro with a hit. Joe Panik, 2 hits, 2-for-4, 2 runs scored. And Hundley, 2-for-3. Not a lot of offense there. 2-0 win for the Giants. So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more baseball. Max Scherzer and Mike Trout after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Welcome back to FST, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. If you play DFS and haven't tried playing MyBookie.ag player props, then you're missing out. Their player props tool allows you to avoid sharks, winning 90% of the money in DFS. So invest in the players that you want without salary caps and forget having to create multiple lineups and ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches. Go to MyBookie.ag, open a new account, and enter the promo code FNTSY, and you'll receive a 50% deposit bonus. Often a player, say Max Scherzer, for instance, will be chalk in DFS and be 80% owned in tournaments because everyone will think the play is obvious. Don't be a loser and eat DFS chalk. Be a winner and play the MyBookie.ag player prop. Plus, you can access the one sport not yet touched by DFS, the sport of kings, horse racing. It's simple. Go to MyBookie.ag, open an account, enter the promo code FNTSY, and receive your 50% deposit bonus. And click the player props tool, choose your player prop, and collect your winnings. That's mybookie.ag. Enter promo code FNTSY. So we were talking, you want to go Trout or Scherzer? I'm looking up the Scherzer stuff right now. So make your point. I don't remember the point you were making on Mike Trout.
It's just for the fact right now that Mookie Betts, if you look at what the season that Mookie Betts is having, leads all of baseball in batting average. He's hitting .359. He's got 17 home runs, 37 RBIs. His on-base percentage is .437. He is an elite outfielder. He is one of baseball's best players. He has a WAR of 4.1. Jose Ramirez is next to him at 4.0. Compared to the National League players, he is comfortably ahead of those guys. He is still a full point plus behind Mike Trout in WAR. Mike Trout is, I mean, it is unbelievable to see what he is capable of doing. It's one of those things where it's premature. Like maybe it's probably sometimes what happened with LeBron, where people saw what he could be and started to say he's the greatest player of all time. And I do think that's part of the reason like backlash came in early with that stuff. But I think you could look at Mike Trout and at the age of, I believe he's 25, 26 he is. It'll be 27 in August. You right now probably could make a sound argument that this is the most talented baseball player we have ever seen. And it just...
I think so.
It just...
I think people make that argument all the time.
It just jumps out to me. Every single time I see it, every single time we come on the show and I look at the stats and I pull certain things up, every time I see his numbers, I am just floored by it. It is unbelievable. And I think what is the most obvious thing is it's because he's an Eagles fan.
Yeah, he's from Jersey. He's from South Jersey. It's funny. People think of all the great baseball players, and most of Major League Baseball, as far as American players are concerned, are from a lot are from the South and Texas and California, and the best player of all time is from New Jersey. So just kind of funny in that regard. And, yeah, he's an Eagles fan, so good for you. Let me make my Scherzer point.
Yeah,
we can come back to Trout. But Max Scherzer last year, he won the Cy Young. He had 27 of the 30 first-place votes. Kershaw garnered the other three. He was 16-6 last year, and with his 200 innings pitched, he had 268 strikeouts, ERA 2.51. So he edged Scherzer. Well, he didn't edge Scherzer, so he got the lion's share of those votes. In the American League, Kluber dominated over Chris Sale. But in the MVP, just to give you a sense, and now granted, 16-6, 2.5 ERA, he was really more dominant than those superficial numbers would tell you. He was excellent last year beyond a 16-6 record. There was a lot of no decisions in there. He was out for a period of time as well. He'd hurt his finger or his back. I can't remember. So he missed a few starts. In fact, he made how many starts last year? 31. So he missed a couple, not many. But in any event, he was 10th in MVP voting. Not even close. No first place votes at all. He was miles behind Giancarlo Stanton, who won the award with his 59 homers. Going back to 2016, when Scherzer also won the NL Cy Young Award with a 20-7 record, 2.96 ERA, 228 innings. He gave up 31 homers, which he has a penchant to do, give up homers. 284 strikeouts that year. Well in front of Jose Fernandez, who, may he rest in peace, had 253 strikeouts there. In the NL MVP voting, Max Scherzer, again, was 10th with no first-place votes. He was even further behind that year when Chris Bryant took 29 first-place votes and won for Daniel Murphy that year. And Chris Bryant had hit 292, 39 homers. His numbers for the Cubs were not nearly as good as the Marlins. Clearly, the Cubs were in the process of winning the World Series, and the Marlins were nothing special last year, to say the least. So that, I think, that gives you some sense. People totally recognize how dominant Scherzer is by the fact that in that year he got 25 first place votes for the Cy Young, one for John Lester, two for Kyle Hendricks, two for Clayton Kershaw that year. So people are overwhelmingly recognizing him. The writers are overwhelmingly recognizing him for the Cy Young Award, but underwhelmingly supporting him in an MVP scenario. So it doesn't mean that it can't happen. Like we just talked about, Justin Verlander just not all that long ago,
Kershaw too,
won one, and it's possible he could turn it around. But I'm just saying that there's still a significant gap in how people evaluate it. And I actually think as analytics and sabermetrics have become more commonplace, I think it's less likely to happen because I think anybody analyzing data would say he's great. He's the Cy Young. But you cannot have a player missing 80% of the team's games and call him most valuable player. It's just not – it doesn't compute for me. I don't know that I've always felt this way, but I've felt this way for a long time. So I would never really vote a pitcher for MVP. They have their award. It's good. I don't really see it's not denigrating them in any way by not giving them the MVP. It's not really a pitcher's award. That's just how I see it.
I think one of the things, though, is I wouldn't say that it's they have their award. Right, because there is it Silver Slugger that typically it goes to the best hitter. So there is an award designated to whomever is just the best hitter. I think though the reason why it feels so rare for them to win it is because of the point that you made of just relative to how few games they played everyday players. I went back and I just looked at the year that Kershaw won MVP, 2014. And if you do look
that's
at
right.
if you look at that year, I
don't know why I wasn't bringing him up during all this. But
it's because he's old now and now he's hurt. He's not washed. Yep. I wouldn't say that. But I mean, he was 21-3 with a 1.77 ERA. He was unreal. He had 239 strikeouts, and I think one of the crazy things was, if I'm not mistaken, he even had some injuries that year. He only had 27 starts, which was sandwiched in between a pair of years where he had 33 starts. So he did miss some time there. He had 6 complete games. I mean, what a season that was from Kershaw. So I think, for me, at least where I would land on it is, it has to be something really spectacular for a pitcher to win that award. Typically, though, I would lean, if it were really close, I'll take the guy that played 150 games over the guy that played 30.
He pitched 198 innings in that regular season. Put that in perspective, right?
That's
divided
crazy.
Divided by 9, and that means he played in effectively, you know, I mean, think about the number of innings that he played as a percentage of what the team played.
I can't believe he was that good, man. Look, the next year he led all of baseball in innings pitched at 232 innings. That is such a significant gap in innings pitched.
Yeah.
And he was clearly this. I mean, we might have been robbed of.
And as far as the MVP voting is concerned, he got 18 first place votes. Stanton got 8 first place votes, and McCutchen got 4. God, that seems like many years ago that happened. But so that was the deal. He played a very small percentage of the team's innings, and he still was able to get an MVP. So, speaking of the Dodgers, as we get back to recapping some of the games, a player that has been a pitcher that's been on fire up until yesterday, a little bit of a rough outing, Walker Buehler, gets a no decision. He pitched 5 innings, 4 earned runs, a couple of strikeouts. Baez picks up the win in relief as the Dodgers beat the Rockies 12-4. They put up a snowman in the 7th inning. Buehler left when it was tie game, put up the snowman in the was it a tie game? No, it wasn't even. They were losing when he left. So they keep him away from the loss. Chris Taylor yesterday, 2-for-3, 2 RBIs. Matt Kemp hitting .347, by the way, Matt Kemp. 2-for-3, 2 RBIs, 2 runs scored. Jacques Peterson, 4-for-5, 4 runs scored, a couple of RBIs. Valera, 3 RBIs, 2-for-5 on the day. Homers were Peterson and Kemp. So on the Rocky side of the ledger, DJ LeMahieu 1-for-5, couple of RBIs, and Charlie Blackmon 2-for-3. I need Charlie Blackmon to just go on a run here for our team. George and I's team is really just super average right now. Our hitting stinks, and it's all banged up. We have Jay Bruce on our team, which I'm not thrilled about, but our pitching's been nasty. So Nolan Arenado, 2-for-4 yesterday. Trevor Story, 3-for-4 with a run scored. And Matt Wolters, 1-for-4 RBI run scored. So a little bit there. Walker Buehler has been really good this year. So not his best outing yesterday. That's all right. I think he can live with it. But he's going to be one of the players that the Dodgers are going to continue to need to step up with Kershaw gone for an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah, the Dodgers are one of the more interesting teams to me, just because I was talking about them there just with the farm system and everything, where because the way the division has been, no one seems to really be separating themselves. I want to see if the run differential point still holds true, where I think that they were the only team with a positive run differential in the division while they were somehow last. No, the Diamondbacks are positive. The Rockies and the Giants are ahead of them that are negative. They have the best run differential in the division, and they're fourth. It's kind of one of those really, really weird things there. The injury bug is killing them, but they're only 2.5 back. They are going to be aggressive. They are one of the teams that I think is going to be really, really interesting to follow. I personally, I love when we get to the trade, when it becomes trade time for MLB, just because it is so unique to all of the other sports, right? Like the way they do trades in the NBA, typically it's piece who can kind of help. Here's a late first round pick, or I mean, sometimes the superstar stuff, but where it's like nine different guys who you maybe have never heard of, but they all have this incredibly high potential, and guys are taking one-year risks on a rental and different things like that. It is also unique. So if the Dodgers are going to try to go all in, do they call on DeGrom? Do they call on Machado? They're going to have to make some type of move, I would assume, because I think it'd be difficult for them to assess where they are currently after 58 games. If I were them, I'd say, yeah, we're the best team in this division. We can pull this together.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 2.5 games back, to your point. But what's funny is that we spent an entire segment bashing the Mets and saying they should blow the whole thing up. Mm. They're 27-29, which is virtually the same record as the 28-30 Dodgers, who I think everybody understands are playing well below expectations. But still, you can have a kind of a rough half to the first year and bounce back. You know, they're only 2.5 games out. The Diamondbacks and Rockies both got off to good starts, and the Dodgers have won 7 of their last 10. So maybe things are turning around, but I don't think they can make any solid planning decisions without having a better understanding of what Kershaw's injury is going to look like. Is it just let's sit him for a couple of starts to give his back some additional rest, or is it he needs back surgery again, he's going to be on the shelf for 3 months, or he's out for the year kind of thing?
If I can say, though, why they may be a little different is the Dodgers were at one point 16-26, 10 games under 500. Since that point, they're 12-4 in the last 16 games, where the Mets, on the other hand, started, I think it was 11-1, right? So that's kind of where the difference would fall in line.
Moving in opposite directions. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. But baseball as a sport, it can be kind of streaky like that, and teams can get on runs and cool off and all that kind of stuff. So which one is the real Dodgers? Which one is the real Mets? I think the growing sense here in New York is that the Mets are the bad team that they've been playing like since after the first 12 games. And I would imagine most people feel like the Dodgers will probably level out. But leveling out with missing the team's best pitcher and player is an entirely different discussion. So we'll see. Obviously, you just have to keep an eye on that. Red Sox, Astros yesterday. Sox get the win, 5-4, big win for them. Scored 3 in the 7th to take the win. Andrew Benintendi with a Christian Vasquez with a homer. Andrew Benintendi with 2-for-4, 2 runs scored. No, sorry. 1-for-4, 2 runs scored, 2 RBIs. J.D. Martinez, 2 more hits, 2 more RBIs. Big win for them. Only 5 hits on the day, but they score 5 runs. So obviously an efficient job done there. As far as the Astros are concerned, we had George Springer 1-for-4, Alex Bregman 1-for-4, Jose Altuve 1-for-4. All 3 of them scored a run on the day. Yuli Gurriel 2-for-4, run and an RBI. Bregman with 2 RBIs as well. He hit a homer off of David Price. David Price gets the win yesterday despite only going 6 innings, 3 runs scored, 7 strikeouts. Justin Verlander, no decision, 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. You jinxed him yesterday. You were talking about yesterday how great Verlander is, and he goes out and gets a no decision.
I mean,
6 innings, 6 strikeouts, 2 earned runs, 2 walks. So
I feel vindicated that's jinxing him. 6 innings, giving up only 2 earned runs. Like that's how good he's been. That's a bad performance. A no decision.
Yeah, I know. He pitched fine. Pitched well, but he jinxed the fantasy owners out there from him getting a win. So. Big win for the Sox there on the road in Houston. We'll get one more in before the break. Twins, Indians. Oh, hang on, let me just do this. And then you can think about what you wanted to say. Brian Dozier, 2-for-4, 2 RBIs, triple yesterday off of Trevor Bauer. Rosario, 1-for-2 with a couple of RBIs, a couple of walks. His average up to 3.10. Escobar, 0-for-4 after a good game, after a little bit of a hot streak here. He's 0-for-4. Morrison 2-for-4. Runs scored. Pitcher Lance Lynn goes 6 innings. He gets the win. 6 innings, only gave up 1 run, 5 strikeouts. Scattered, 5 walks, 2 hits. Trevor Bauer takes the loss. He's 4-for-4 on the season. 5 2/3, 6 hits, 11 strikeouts in the 5 2/3. Gave up 3 runs. So, unfortunately, he gets the loss there. So that's it for the box scores. We're going to talk NBA in the third hour, but what was the one thing you wanted to close on?
We may have to extend it, but there was a point made. I believe it was Schmaltz on the broadcast. I don't even remember what game it was.
By the way, he qualified for the U.S. Senior Open. How crazy is that?
Did he?
John Schmaltz is going to play in the U.S. Senior Open.
That's
yeah.
wild. John Schmaltz has got a lot of ambitions.
He's a great golfer, and this has been talked about since back when he played for the Braves. I mean, all throughout his career, he talked about potentially playing golf after he retired, and he has obviously still been getting after it, and he qualified for the U.S. Senior Open. He got one of the three qualifying spots. So I actually happen to know where that is this year because I've been to that hotel where it is, the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, which is an absolutely historically beautiful resort. So he's going to be playing there. That's pretty cool, right?
That is pretty cool. No, I think he was making a comment about wanting to if he were ever the commissioner, that he would make it illegal that if you traded a player, that he couldn't then sign back the next offseason. I don't know if he like holds a grudge against the Yankees
like what
or something.
The Yankees did with Chapman.
Yeah, no, that's where he was coming from, and I was curious on your opinion on that, because that seemed like a wild thing where he was just upset that the Yankees basically traded Chapman for Gleyber Torres, and now he's amazing, and they also have Chapman.
Not like I understand grapes. Where he's coming from. He didn't want any secretive deals that are maybe making the deal unethical in the first place. I'll comment on it after the break in hour number three. We're going to talk mostly NBA, but we'll come back talking about the Smoltz comment right after this.